The following is a special presentation of Tony Curry Radio.
Welcome once again to Kiefer and Curry. He is Kip Kiefer. I'm Tony Curry. You've seen our two faces on the television every Saturday morning, 10:30, 11 o'clock. Thanks to my partner for making that happen. Of course, we're going to be on every single Saturday morning. We get the best numbers. We get bigger numbers than College Game Day. We're not saying that we're better than College Game Day. We're different than College Game Day because it's a national show. We're very local. We're going to have all kinds of local stars. We've had Aldo Greco on. We've got Damon Johnson on. We're going to have Mark Ingram on. We're going to have all kinds of local. So Pat Benatar is supposed to be on. So we're going to be having some people on that perhaps aren't what you're normally seeing on
Paul
Saturday
Feinbaum,
mornings.
Paul Feinbaum, Tim Brando, Jim Tessitore, Joe Tessitore. It's going to go on and on.
And what we want to do is we want to do something, a different show, a unique show. And certainly it's all about college football. Every Saturday morning from 10:30 to 11 o'clock. So I just was listening to your Need to Know show. And the tag is, can you be a democratic socialist? I don't know. Can you be a carnivorous vegan? Which I absolutely love. And you and I were like, he's like, oh, I think I just gave you a sound tag. And that just goes to show that you and me are like spot on. So here is my tag for the Kiefer and Curry show this week.
All right.
Why are we still celebrating or acting like we're celebrating women crossing a sports threshold?
Yes.
Do you know what I'm talking about?
We had the first ever woman work a major league regular season game on Saturday night.
Yes, for your Atlanta Braves and those Miami Marlins. Powell makes herstory, not history, herstory.
Oh, herstory.
The
okay.
The time has come for one and all to play ball. This woman, her name is Jen Powell, P-A-W-O-L. Is 48 years of age. She umpired her first game ever, 1990, for a women's softball league. Mm-hmm. From that point on, she's always kind of had this thing about umpiring. And so in the early 2000s, she had gotten together with some friends. She said, I'm going to try to be the first female umpire for Major League Baseball. And it's like, it's never going to happen. You can't do it. It's just,
that's ridiculous. Because believe me, I live that all the time. People tell me what I can't do.
Exactly. So she goes to our hometown of Cincinnati, Ohio, where they're having an umpires gathering. It's an open cat call, if you will, for umpires.
Interesting.
And believe it or not, this particular weekend is actually around women being invited to come to this particular umpire thing. She said, I didn't realize that women were even invited to be umpires in Major League Baseball. And so here we are 10 years later, and I'm not going to say why did it take 10 years? It was 2015. Maybe there just wasn't a good umpire that was a female back in 2015.
Nobody blind enough to be an umpire. Not just anybody.
Your vision's too good. You're out.
She doesn't wear glasses. Just because you're female, or just because you're gay, or just because you're black, or just because you're Hispanic, or just because you're Dominican, or just because you're transvestite, just because you're, doesn't mean that you're the best in that position.
Right.
So she just so happens is the first female ever in a regular season baseball game to be an umpire. She gets a 3-minute standing ovation at Major League Baseball's game between the Marlins and the Atlanta Braves. I can tell you right now, they weren't standing for the Braves.
No.
And I'm sitting there dumbfounded and I'm thinking to myself, why are we celebrating this? Well, good for her. That's wonderful. A dream has come true. I'll celebrate that all you want. But the fact that they're making Major League Baseball, they're making it look like a caveman. They're like, well, you know what? I can't believe that Major League Baseball hasn't had an umpire. We've had it in the NHL. We've had it in the NFL. We got the blah, blah. Greg Popovich has got it. We've had general managers who are women. We've had women who have been in baseball offices, presidents of company who are women.
Oh, yeah.
We just haven't had them as an umpire on a baseball field for a game. And all of a sudden, everyone's making it this big historical
threshold point of, oh my gosh, we've just crossed over and let's give her a standing ovation. And I don't get it. I'm happy for her. I don't care if all the umpires are women. I didn't even realize we didn't have a woman umpire. So why are we celebrating it? Or why are we acting like it's important we celebrate? Tell me the answer, please.
Well, I guess it's just different. And baseball, as we know, of the professional sports lineup, is probably the most lack of progression in terms of thinking and adapting to trends. But I don't find it even that unusual to think. I mean, to be an umpire, it doesn't require any tremendous physical skills. No. It's not like
Harry Wendelstedt.
Yeah, exactly. Eric Gregg, he weighed about 350.
Didn't he almost die on the field?
And he ended up dying after that, not that long later, because he collapsed in a game. Yeah. He was like 350. I mean, he was just a huge guy. Mm. But there's no real physical requirements. And now, the game's getting more and more automated. Next year, they're going to be going to this strike challenge thing where, you can stop the game and challenge any strike call. And the technology is so good. It's not like a big delay where they put their headphones on. But they use that in the All-Star game, and they had a verdict within 10 seconds.
Yeah. They're using it in the ATP. They use it in tennis already. And it takes 3 seconds. Yeah.
Yeah. And we talked about, some of that screw up with the equipment just happening to go down on a critical point at Wimbledon. But the bottom line is I don't find this that appalling, just like they made a big deal a couple years ago in the NFL about halfway through the game on a Monday night that said, you may not have noticed. Of course we didn't notice, but this is the first game in NFL history that the crew on the officials are all black, and I was going, so what? These guys are all guys that have been on the roster.
Did they really do that? Did they really say that?
Yeah. Oh, and, they made a big deal about it. This is a historical moment because this is the first all black officiating crew in NFL history. And I was thinking to myself, well, these guys have all worked games. I mean, the fact they're working together, who cares what the officials look like or who they are? It's this whole inclusion obsession that we've just gone through. I didn't talk about it today on Need to Know, but another policy that's been disastrous that the left has insisted on is this DEI, inclusion and whatever all those diversity and equity and inclusion. I had a little blackout there for a second, but that's destructive because in that situation, if you're just wedging somebody in that's not qualified, then everybody suffers for that. Not only do the fans at a baseball game, if she's out there because somebody says we got to hire a woman, but it doesn't sound like that's what because of the timetable involved here. I think she probably earned her stripes like all umpires do, have to work a ton of minor league games and stay in the Dewdrop Inn.
That's a full time. It's a full time gig, right? Major League Baseball hire. It's not like that. I don't think in the NFL. I think it's not. In Major League Baseball, you were hired as an umpire, and that's a full time gig.
It pays.
Yeah.
Yeah. So she obviously paid her dues because you earned that opportunity by grading out highly. Yeah. And I'm satisfied that that's how she got there. She wasn't put there to be some kind of token that Major League Baseball could point and say, see, we're up to date because it penalizes everybody. And the persons that it penalizes the most is the person that's ultra qualified for those particular jobs that don't get it because they don't look the right way or they're not the right sex. So you know, the whole DEI thing, I'm taking the optimistic high road here, Tony, and hoping that didn't apply here. I'm hoping she's there because she deserves to be there.
I totally agree with you. And I you know, this is not like everyone wearing the number 42. This is not a Jackie Robinson moment.
No.
And to act like it is, and to act like that Major League Baseball, and it's been on 1869, I believe, was the first Major League Baseball team. Yeah. I think that was my Cincinnati Red
Stockings. It was the Red Stockings.
Red Stockings back in 1869. To make it sound like, you know, we've had to wait over 160 years to get the first woman. This is not like a civil rights thing. This is not, it's so far removed from that. And to treat it like it is, to me, is a slap in the face to everyone else who had to wait their turn to do things like Jackie Robinson. There's a reason why we all wear number 42 on that particular day, and as we should. I don't know. Maybe it's because it's a slow time. I know that we're always wanting to do, but what bothers me is the self ingratiation, if you will, of people that feel like we've got to make a big story out of this because it's the first time a woman's been an umpire. And that was like the number one story on ESPN. And I'm just like, and that's fine. That's great. That's good. And I don't have a problem if we had six women. I'm sure there's going to become a time. Maybe I would think if she's the only one, it would probably take another 100 years to get six female umpires on a baseball field, I would assume. Good God Almighty. We had the pitch clock and the first woman umpire in the same year. What the hell are we doing here? Next thing you're going to tell me,
Rose is eligible for the Hall of Fame now because he's dead.
Next thing you know, you're going to tell me we're going to have interleague all year long. What? Yeah. I just thought it was, whenever we have the first of anything, it's a big deal.
I agree with you. I'm going to give Rob Manfred, the commissioner of baseball, a thumbs up here, because this is all happening under his watch, because we had this parade of commissioners, Bud Selig and Faye Vincent, and a couple have come to mind, that these guys wouldn't make a single change because they were scared to death to tinker with the formula. And so give Rob Manfred some credit, because they have made a few moves. The rule changes, Tony, has made Major League Baseball such a better game. The pitch clock and not having to sit through seven or eight extra innings when nobody can score. I like the ghost runner in a regular season game at second base.
I do too.
I like the fact that they increased the size of the bag at first to try to cut down on injuries. I like the fact that you can only throw over to first base twice. Remember, I remember pitchers that would throw over like 7, 8, 9 times. It was just ridiculous. And I'll tell you where I really appreciated it. I tried to watch the College World Series games this year, and Tony, I don't want to watch a baseball game that lasts 4.5 or 5 hours. It's just, it's mind numbing.
It's so funny. It's so funny you bring that up, because I was just talking to my son last night. We were watching the game. I forget which game it was. St. Louis Cubs.
Yeah,
it was a great ball game. Came down to the last inning, and we're sitting there watching it. And I said, you know, I don't even think they put the digits up there where the clock is ticking down between pitches anymore. And he said, oh yeah, they do it. They just do it the last 8 or 9 seconds. I thought for sure that they were just going to skirt that and go, okay, we tried that.
Yeah.
Well, you know, if they have stuck to it. They have called strikes on strikes. They've called balls on balls.
If you're a quarter second,
they drill your ass. And I mean, it adds a little anxiety to the game, particularly when you got bases loaded, man, and a 3-2 count and a guy can't get the ball, but it is methodically increase the gate of the game to the point where it's saving us 30 or 45 minutes. Like I said, you know, it's funny. A game would start at 1 o'clock and you go check the game off at 4:05 and they'd be in the sixth inning. Ugh. I'm thinking to myself, sixth inning. Now if you go to a 1 o'clock game, it's over by 3:05, which I think they've just done a fantastic job at. And I think that's wonderful. No, it's amazing. Good for Major League Baseball. Let me ask, I'm going to go in a little bit different route here, unless you want to go a little deeper on this.
I'll say, if I was at the game, I would have probably been on my feet applauding her too, but I would have been applauding the accomplishment of her getting there. And I until somebody tells me differently or she does something ridiculous to identify herself as not qualified, which I don't anticipate. You know, I think she's there because she's earned that opportunity. And I applaud anybody that has the, you know, the gumption and the determination to live a dream of theirs. I mean, it's something that, you know, like I say, I could talk all day about that. So I'm taking the high road here, and I think she deserved to be recognized, not because she was the first to accomplish it, but because she has earned the opportunity to be out on that field.
Did you know that I want to say, was it the vest or the hat? Something was right away sent to Cooperstown.
Cool.
It is cool, but I'm... It is. I guess it is cool. I'm not trying to be the old man on the front porch here, but I'm thinking to myself, we're going to be sending her hat. Am I going to Cooperstown to see the first woman's umpire's hat?
Yeah, that's probably not an exhibit that's going to really pack them in.
Right next to Pete Rose's bat when he hit 41-56. No.
But I hear you. This should not be a big, publicity deal. This should be appreciating and congratulating, any umpire that's out there has gone the same route. So I think it's notable from that standpoint. But yeah, is this his? I mean, it might be historic just because it's the first, but I don't think it's something that we may need to make a huge deal about, because umpires debut every day.
All right, grab the steering wheel with both hands and jerk it to the left. From a legacy standpoint, who's going to be remembered most? Roger Goodell, Adam Silver, or Rob Manfred?
Goodell really hasn't
Remember the crap he came on board with, the Pac-Man John. He came on board with a lot of crap.
Yeah, he did.
I mean, a lot of beatings and a lot of, I mean, he almost got fired several times.
Yeah. It's tough to be a commissioner in a league with gazillionaire owners especially baseball's got a lot of history of that. Football, the stronger the leader, it's just like politics. Pete Rozelle is probably the most storied NFL commissioner of all time, because Pete Rozelle had a lot of football background, and Pete Rozelle said, hey, this is how it's going to be. We're going to get our house in order. And if owners didn't like it, you know, he didn't care. You've got a lot of these guys kind of catering to the political side. I think Adam Silver's kind of that way, although there's been some innovation in the NBA. But I think he's got the toughest job right now, because I think interest in the NBA is not as at a high level as it has been.
Let me ask you this. You just gave me like a million questions. First of all, I want to ask you the question, which one of those three sports has changed the most since their since their commissioner was there?
I'd say baseball, like we talked about, because they made real changes to the game to make it more popular and more enjoyable to watch. The other two sports haven't really done that.
Does it not feel like, though, in the NBA, maybe I'm going to catch some crap for this, so I got to be careful, but it feels like we're corralling cats a lot more fiercely in the NBA than we are in those other two. It seems like in the NBA, man, you got to have your fingers on the pulse of the NBA every single day. You got guys packing pistols in their locker rooms. You've got this contingency of African-American culture that we're not used to. You tell me, when we go to basketball games, hell, you can't even hear the game. The music's so stinking loud.
No.
You go to the Memphis Grizzly game, man. I mean, it is up and down the floor. They're playing music the entire damn time. It's just a different culture.
The Hawks do the same thing.
Yeah.
I hate that. I mean, I want to hear the squeaking of the shoes. I want to hear the ball clank off the rim.
And of all the dudes to be the commissioner for the NBA right now, if I took the top 10 basketball players, tatted up, earrings, shorts, goofy looking hats, the whole nine yards, and then put Adam Silver in the middle of the bunch, he is the most unlikely looking commissioner you've ever seen of any league, let alone the NBA, which is primarily black.
Well, you and I did a show probably almost a year ago now that the NBA really doesn't market its product. They don't want Kip Kiefer and Tony Curry to come to the games.
They don't want like white guys. No, they don't.
They don't want old white dudes. No. You know, they want young people and people of different ethnic backgrounds, and all that's fine if that's what they're marketing to. But I mean, just to blast rap music. And I remember that show we had, I had just come from a Hawks game, and I told you, I couldn't stand the fact that now, you know, I was a PA announcer. I know you've done some PA announcing.
Yeah.
And there's an art to it. But now the PA announcer is not enough. You have to have I forgot what they call it. My son's not here to remind me, but like a cheer
coordinator or something like
so
that.
So you've got some schmuck going when the other team's coming down and the Hawks go back on the, he's going defense. I mean, I don't need that. I don't need a yell leader on the PA blasting all it in the over the rap music. I will add.
Yeah.
So anyway, yeah, the NBA fan experience, and I think the game has diminished now too, because I've told you this story before. Our good friend Alan Johnson, AJ from Talk 99.5, who's a staple guy over there, great producer. He went to New Orleans with us on a Birmingham Racing Commission trip about 2 years ago, and he said, I haven't been to an NBA game in a while. He was really excited. About halfway through the first quarter, he poked me and said, what the hell's going on? All the 7 foot guys are standing out beyond the 3-point line. I said, well, that's how the game's played now, AJ. Yep. Mm-hmm. Nobody wants to get into the trenches and mix it up down low. You stay a lot more upright if you're out there begging for a 3-pointer. He was just baffled. He said, this is not the same game, because they had an opposite problem before that. The game had diminished down into just throwing it down in the post and having Patrick Ewing or, you know, somebody, some giant guy just thump you with their rear end 5 or 6 times, they get enough space to just kind of turn around and lay it in. The game has gone completely the opposite direction. And I don't know if it's for the better, because, you know, we see these fluctuations. An NBA a game one night might be a 30-point blowout for one team, mm-hmm. but the next night they go, you know, 9 for 34 from the 3-point line and they get beat.
Yeah, so, we saw that in the playoffs big time.
Yeah.
It was just like, I mean, just because a team wins by 35, if they play 10 times, that's maybe one time where it's going to be 35 points. And sometime in those 10 games, you'll see the other team win by 35 points over the same
team. It's crazy. And it all comes down to who's making threes.
Who's making threes. Yeah, it's crazy. I do think from a standpoint of trying to, you know, normally a commissioner to me is like my general manager in radio. If I never saw my GM, it was a good day.
Yeah.
I don't want to see my GM. I don't want to get called to the GM's office. I don't want to be part of that. He's my doors open. I don't even want to see the GM. As long as you stay out of my area, I'm going to stay in my area. It's good to go. So when you don't hear a lot about a commissioner, that's normally a good thing. Now, we heard a lot about Roger Goodell when he first took that position, because there was all kinds. Just go back and see all the crap he had to deal with the first couple of years. And a lot of the stuff was like, don't get Roger Goodell. He's not the one who took the swing at the woman in the elevator.
No, nope.
You know, don't give him the crap. I mean, he's just throwing the gauntlet
down. And his sport is king.
Yeah.
Let's give credit. He's presiding over the most successful sports league right now in the history of sports leagues.
They're in cahoots now with ESPN, for God's sakes. I mean, that's we're talking big time here. It's going to be interesting too. I one final question. I'll let you go, 'cause we're running along, but I could talk another 3 hours in this. We're going to have a commissioner for college football. How do you think it's going to play out? Is it going to be someone that's outspoken, or is it going to be someone that's kind of sitting back in the back?
Well, people keep suggesting that Nick Saban is the guy for the job. I think Nick is maybe a little too candid for that job, where he would not be able to have a filter on things. And it comes down to whether or not Miss Terry is going to let him have a job again. Somebody asked me this morning, you think Nick Saban's going to coach again? I said, absolutely not, Terry Saban's not going to let him.
I don't know where that's coming from. I've heard that from several places. Well, like, what are they talking about? I've not heard that.
At SEC SEC media days, Greg McElroy said that he heard from a source in Tuscaloosa that Nick Saban would consider returning to coaching. Yeah. And that blew that story up. And now everybody's talking about it. So I heard one commentator who obviously doesn't know what they're talking about this weekend on a podcast say, well, Kalen DeBoer not only has to prove that the last year was a fluke, but now he's got the ominous figure of Nick Saban looking over his shoulder, ready to step back into the job for added pressure. I think that's total BS, Tony.
No, and there's going to be a lot of Alabama fans are going to be rooting for losses. I hate to say that, but if they knew Nick Saban was coming back next season, they would take a 10-loss season.
Yeah, they would sell DeBoer out in a heartbeat.
In a heartbeat. Yeah.
Speaking of sports, as we wrap this up, speaking of sports that just can't seem to get it right, I was reading a really good article in The Athletic today that was looking at trends over the last 10 years in this college football playoffs scenario and how even expanding it to 12 last year, they still got it wrong pretty much from the standpoint of we've got such sophisticated technology now. ESPN has its computer enhanced rating systems. AI can be programmed to interpret strength of schedule. And, you know, we work with a brilliantly talented guy who just happens to be my son, Case Kiefer. Mm-hmm. Everything he does, Tony, is numbers. Yep. It's data and analysis and numbers and comparisons and that technology is so advanced, but we still got a bunch of nitwits. We're talking about DEI. You got all kinds of people in that room who are only there because they know somebody or have some kind of connection that are picking teams that last year, two of the top eight teams by computer rankings and all of these sophisticated enhanced analysis were two of the eight best teams in the country, both from the SEC, as a matter of fact, in Ole Miss and Alabama, but both them got left out of the playoffs in favor of SMU, which, you know, and Indiana, who didn't even rank in the top 17 in that analysis.
I have absolutely no problem with that. And I'll tell you why. First of all, it gives us something to talk about. And
that's true.
And the thing is, and Saban will say this, win your football games, you know, win your football games. Don't lose to Vanderbilt. I mean, I
don't disagree with you.
You know, now I'm not real crazy about, I don't think you should ever lose to Northern Illinois and get into the playoffs. I think there should be something where if you lose to a D2 team or a team that's getting paid to beat you, like the Fighting Irish, I have a problem with that. I really do. It's not a good look. It's one thing to lose to Vanderbilt, but to lose to Northern Illinois or lose to Liberty or who, and I know Liberty is probably not a good example because they're actually a lot better than they used to be, thanks to Hugh Freeze, who, by the way, looks like he's going back there at the end of the season.
Yeah, maybe.
Yeah, because of the girth.
But Indiana didn't beat a single top 25 team, Tony, and they're in the playoffs. That's just ridiculous.
Yeah.
This year, Penn State's ranked third. Their first three games are Nevada, Reno. Then they play mighty Florida International. And then the third game is against Villanova. And they're going to win all three of those games, and they're probably going to move up a spot because Ohio State and Texas play in the first game.
You're right.
So for playing three complete tomato cans, they're going to be rewarded with a promotion.
We got so much to talk about. ABC 3340 will do our show again. The starting lineup coming this weekend. We'll have the UAB athletic director, Mark Ingram, who will answer any questions. Yeah, he's going to join us. Joe Tessitore is going to join us the next couple of weeks. All kinds of special guests. You never know who's going to be joining us on the starting lineup again on ABC 3340. Tell people where they can find you on weekends because you're working your ass off on Saturdays and Sundays.
Yeah, we got it going on. I've been working with another one of our cohorts from the starting lineup, the legend, who has been really enjoying putting on the headphones and sitting behind the mic and pontificating on Saturday mornings. Terry Quillian joined us for a lot of that program this past Saturday. Terry is, it's the preseason. You don't have your superstar playing. She might get banged up or get laryngitis. We got to have her ready for the regular season.
Yeah.
But between Terry and Legend and myself on Saturdays, and then Terry and I will start our ninth year of the morning after on Sundays from 9 to 11. It's become the staple sports program and sports radio here in Birmingham. Really excited about all that. So we're there, and between that and the starting lineup with the luminary of lineup of guests, guests that we get. Tony just said it. You never know who's going to be in the starting lineup. And I give you total credit because you're always the guy hustling up very good list of guests that we have.
It's easy to get guests for a show like this, man, because everyone wants to be on it.
It's great. So we've got it going on. We will have t-shirts. We're going to be giving away at functions. We're going to have happy hour parties at several spots around town during the season where fans can get on TV and win great prizes. And it's the theme for all of our shows, Tony. It is football weekend information domination.
Very good. Thank you, my friend.
Hey, Tony, enjoy it.
This has been a special presentation of Tony Curry Radio.